he was going to stay in the...
He was a Louisiana man named Montreal Doe. Folks around called him Six Gun Joe. Worked with ICAR, don't you know? Investigating UFOs. Out for a drive with a gal one night, they stopped to check out the reporting site. When an alien lift right there on the ground commenced to throw in his weight around. Now, all the Six Gun didn't take too kindly to that kind of thing. Especially without Vaseline or anything, but, you know, seriously. Well, Six Gun looked that critter right in the eye and said, any last wish before you die, you'll reach for his gun, quick as a twitch, and said, fill your club, you son of a bitch. Now, a legend spread across the land about this pistol-waving man. But if you're from space or from Earth below, you don't give no lip to Six Gun Joe.
Welcome to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo.
Enjoying their night tonight, evening, a great afternoon, wherever they may be on our lovely blue planet. Tonight's guest is going to be Mary Rodwell. Sorry, I was talking with Mary, guys, before we started. And actually, I got into a conversation with her and kind of lost my train of thought on where I was going here this evening. But I want to welcome everyone to UFO Undercover. Really, I like having Mary on the show. She's one of the few researchers in the field, ladies and gentlemen, that actually are doing research in the areas that we're doing research in. And she's very well versed in it, very knowledgeable about it. Of course, tonight, Mary, we're time traveling again, aren't we? In case you don't know, what is it, 10 o'clock in the morning where you are, huh?
That's right, so it's good morning from Australia, Joe.
That's right. As a matter of fact, it's 10 o'clock Thursday morning, ladies and gentlemen. Here it is 7 o'clock Wednesday night where I'm at, so I love that. I'm sorry, guys. It's like talking to the future. So y'all should pay attention. We're listening to a voice from the future. Anyway, I'll behave. Mary, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and introduce yourself correctly so everybody knows who you are. And then I kind of want to talk about your organization. Go ahead and tell them a little bit about who you are.
Right. Well, very, very briefly, I run an organization called ACERN, which is the Australian Close Encounter Resource Network here in Perth, Western Australia. Up to date, I've probably had resourced from me about 1,300 individuals worldwide. Many of them are from Australia, but literally calls and emails from Alaska, Russia, Japan, you name it, from Mexico, wherever. And it's all about the same thing, you know, about people's experiences. It's about them saying, I have an experience, a lot of the time saying, look, I think I'm going crazy. And honestly, Joe, if you'd said to me 30 years ago as a nurse midwife, which was my profession 30 years ago, that I would be writing books on, contact experiences and aliens and UFOs, I'd have probably sent you to the nearest psychiatrist. But here I am 30 years later. I have worked in psychological health for 20 years as a counsellor in the UK, in a medical practice, as well as here in hospice for about 12 years before I went into private practice. And my very first client came to me with this experience, and I really didn't know what to make of it. But there you go. That's sort of the start of it. And from that, I did my research, read books from Dr. John Mack, as all of you may well know that's versed in this whole topic. He was a professor of psychiatry at Harvard University that wrote Abduction and Passport to the Cosmos, which was coming from a very scientific, psychological perspective where he'd done the usual testing, psychological testing, and found these people were not only psychologically sound and very credible, and they were having real experiences. And that was sort of a, like the Bible to me for a while until I started to do my own research.
I can understand that. And, you know, I'm the same way, actually, because, you know, a lot of John Mack's works I followed. And even a few of the other ones, I'm not going to mention their names because sometimes they aggravate me. But I took, that's what I started my basis of my work on, because it was easier. It's kind of like cheating, I guess. They did a lot of the groundwork. They got a lot of the stuff out of the way. They got a lot of the basics out of the way. They presented some credible evidence. And of course, it made mine and your life a little bit easier. I wouldn't say real easy, but a little bit easier. 1300, Greg, you trying to catch up with us? What is, you hustling, aren't you? See, I was telling this to another abduction researcher a couple of weeks ago that I said, if you really, really want caseloads, there's people out there. I said, trust me, if you start asking, you're going to be surprised at how many people come forward. Now, you said Australia. Let me ask you this now. Being in Aussie land, what kind of aliens y'all have down there? I mean, I'm being serious. I know I sound like I was kidding.
Okay. So what kind of contact
I was thinking like greys, reptilians, human types.
Yep. Well, I've got a DVD called Expressions of ET Contact, a visual blueprint, and in it I've got at least 40 different beings that my clients have drawn, and this is from children as well, I might add. Yes, certainly the Zetas, the little four-foot, child height beings, but not all of them are grey. Some of them are beige. There are other colours. Certainly many different types of humanoids, the reptilian or lizard-like, various forms of that. Also, lion-type beings with big manes. A lot of them, people see those, as well as the praying mantis or mantis beings, which are anything from 10 to 20 feet high that look like insect kinds of beings. Beings with red hair and big green eyes with no pupils. Cat-like beings of various forms. This is the kind of range that I get in Australia.
Now, for you, I mean, you think they're all aliens, or may, some of them might be something else? Because I know sometimes when I'm dealing with abduction cases, sometimes it's, I guess for lack of a better word, paranormal. I hate using that word, but because I know that a lot of people want to say demonic. I wouldn't call it that, but some people say when they run into certain types, they label them aliens, but later on they turn out to be something else. I was just seeing if you had run into that yourself. Or
there does seem to be a mix, Joe, in the sense of how people interpret them, and a lot comes from their own belief system. So if they're particularly very religious, they may come from the terms of where someone who isn't religious might say they see a light being, they may interpret it as an angel.
Yeah.
And if it's a lizard-like being, for example, if they come from a religious perspective, they may call it a demon or a devil. So there is a certain mix of people to take into account, of course. But the bottom line is, I think, many of these may very well not only be extraterrestrial, but I've come across many that I believe are interdimensional. And these are ones that also look, I think, like big spiders, because arachnophobia is a very common indicator of this experience. And I think these ones seem to suggest they're interdimensional rather than extraterrestrial. But again, we need so much more research to be able to identify them with more clarity.
Well, no, so that's a good point, bringing up interdimensional, because a lot of people don't think about that. You know, they think about extraterrestrials, or then they think about spiritual or demonic or things like that, but they forget that, you know, on a multi-dimensional plane, it's quite feasible that there might be several different types. I mean, some of them may look just like us, but then again, some of them may look like something, whatever, became dominant life form on this planet in that dimension, I guess is what I'm trying to say, could be coming through on the side of the technology. So, no, it's a good point. I'm glad you brought it up, because how many researchers even want to touch on the dimensional thing? I'm thinking, well, guys, if they can come across light, time and space, why can't they simply come across a dimension as well? I mean, I for some reason, Marian, I don't know if you run into this or not, but for some reason, a lot of people I talk to think there can only be one or the other. They're not really giving credit to the fact that, there could be extraterrestrials, there could be spiritual beings, and there could be dimensional beings. It doesn't have to all just be one or the other. But maybe I'm wrong. I could be wrong on this. What do you think?
I think you're absolutely right. I think the trouble is with human beings, we're very keen to categorize. And the biggest problem for me has been when people have wanted to do that, because the more I've researched into it, it's like the onion, you know, that you take one layer off and there's another one. And I stick to something very important. Thomas Kuhn was the author of The Structure of Scientific Revolutions. And I basically love the way he said that the way to do research is just to observe, drop all your preconceived categories as best you can, and just collect raw information. Don't even use words like happened or didn't happen, exist or doesn't exist, inside, outside, real or unreal. Just put that aside and collect raw data. And what he's really saying is that way we can actually be open to looking at having a better understanding. And what I do now is look for patterns rather than saying, I think this one's this or this one's that, because we really don't understand our own reality anyway. I mean, look at string theory. It's looking at 11 dimensions or whatever, you know. There's others talking about the holographic universe. There's so much we don't understand about our reality, so how can we possibly quantify some of these intelligences that may very well be interdimensional, extra-dimensional, working in different realms as well as what we call the afterlife? I think there's, you know, that from my understanding, some of these intelligences may very well work in the realms we call the afterlife as well, and some of my research seems to suggest that. So I think we just have to be very, very careful about how we choose to interpret and just be open to whatever the data is.
No, I agree. I agree with you. I try to focus on just what's at hand and working with the data that we have coming in from the different groups we work with. But I've been real fortunate in a lot of stuff that, you know, we're a big organization now. There's a lot of us out there. And fortunately for me, there are people in the organization that work in other fields, such as paranormal and dimensional and stuff like that. So I can spend more of my attention concentrating on things like the grays, the reptilians, the humans, the light beings, which you're right, can be interpreted at least. I guess you could interpret the light beings as aliens, dimensional beings, demonic beings, angelic beings. I'm sure somebody could even think of something more than that for them. Personally, I think they're extraterrestrials, by the way, just in case anybody wants to know my thoughts on this. But that's the thing, and it is a lot to do with interpretation and in the eye of the beholder and things along those lines. So it is important to try to keep your own personal feelings and views out of any investigation, guys and girls. It really is. I know it's tough. I know Mary had raised a certain way. I was raised a certain way, and it's hard when you're doing this research. But hey, if you want the truth, put everything aside and just look for the data. Or in this case, look for the aliens. But I don't know. For me, it's a mix. When we're talking about contactees, I've been very fortunate in the fact that most of the people who come to us seem to be legitimate in the fact that they've had some kind of experience or contact. I know for other researchers, they say it's a lot different. They have a lot more people coming that are either faking it, hoaxing it, or I guess need attention or something. I mean, how is it for you? I mean, is it concentrated for you like that? Or?
Well, to be quite honest, when people say to me, you know, is there a certain percentage that are faking or fantasizing or whatever, I have to tell you there's probably a very minute amount that would ever bother to do that, because what do you gain out of it? There's no reason. You don't get notoriety. You don't, you know, it's not something you want to shout from the rooftops because most people will laugh at you. And what I say to them is, I had a family literally fly from the UK to see me because of their experiences. I've had people fly from New Zealand and from the eastern states to see me. These, you know, why would you bother to do that and spend all that money if, in fact, it's a fantasy or you're just looking for some kind of notoriety? I'm not going to make you famous. But the bottom line is, these people are coming to me from long distances sometimes because for them it's affecting their whole lives and they want answers. And the bottom line is, for most people that come to me, I mean, I've got lawyers on my books, doctors, psychiatrists, nurses, social workers, people that have got a huge credibility professionally that are saying to me, you know, Mary, this is my experience. But the sad thing is, many of them can't discuss it with their colleagues because of the derision and the fear that they're going to be seen as psychologically suspect. And I remember saying to one lawyer, you know, if you came out and said that this is your experience, it would give it a lot of credibility. And he said, Mary, he says, I earn $500 an hour. He said, what do you think would happen to my business
if
I actually mentioned that I actually see aliens?
And he's got a point, you know, and it's a shame, but I tell people all the time, we're the same way. We have a lot of credible people in contact, and a lot of people that you would just be amazed at who some of these people are, but coming forward, it's not an option, because in mainstream society today, at least in what I like to call the civilized world, it's not going to happen. People are going to take it the wrong way. Even if they like this guy and they know this guy and they trust him with their money, they're still going to be like, oh, well, he's lost his money. He's talking to aliens. We can't trust him with, you know, million-dollar accounts anymore. When nothing's changed, he's still the same person, but, you know, that's something we've got to work on. And, I mean, the more credible people come forward, Mary, the better chances we have, but I do understand their reasons for not.
Absolutely. But the worst thing for them is the fact that they feel so isolated, mm-hmm. because who can they talk to? You know, and this is why I said the more that they feel at peace with it, at least with themselves, and normalize it, the more they can get on with their lives, even if it is something that they can't share with most people. But what I think, Joe, a lot of people don't realize is that this is intergenerational. It goes through families. And if one person in a family comes to me, it's quite likely that siblings, parents, grandparents, and grandkids are all in. And even though some of them may be in denial or not aware of it, it does impact on whole families. And this is why, ultimately, you know, we've all got to own that, you know, the emperor has no clothes, you know? And this is real.
See, now y'all know why I'm always raving about Mary. See, she does her homework, people. Homework. I'm sorry, that's one of my pet peeves. People ask me all the time, prove it to me. I say, well, go do your homework, then. I won't have to prove it until you prove it to yourself. You know, that's what they get. Do your own homework. But because you're very well researched. And, you know, besides myself and you and about three others I know, most people won't really go in depth into what we're talking about tonight, like being generational. They don't understand that this runs deep in family lines. You know, you can go back, well, as far as you can find a living relative, you can usually find a contactee in that family. So, now, let me ask you this. Have you experienced, like, you know, you've worked in multi-generational cases, right, where, you know, more aware.
Yes.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting to me because, and I don't know if this is true in Australia, but I'm going to find out right now. I notice a lot of times, like, if there's a brother and a sister, or two sisters or two brothers, and they're both contactees, I found it interesting, especially lately, I should say in the last about 10 years, I've noticed a lot of these cases, one will be having a very, I guess, for lack of a better term, a really kind of good experience, whereas the other one seems to be having a much, I wouldn't call it an evil experience, but it seems to be a much rougher experience. There seems to be two different styles of contacts there, and one seems to be having an easier time because it seems to be an easier style contact. I know this doesn't make any sense to y'all, ladies and gentlemen, but I hope Mario knows what I'm talking about. It just seems like that one's having a good contact, one's having a bad contact. And I don't understand that, and I have seen that now in several families. It's like they're doing some type of emotional testing to see how each one of them is going to react to a different environment. It's the only way I can explain it, but it's weird. I don't know if you've run across that or not, though.
Well, there's two things that, it's a very good question. There are two things that come to mind here. First of all, what we've got to understand is human beings, we're all very different in how we perceive the world and our experiences. You can have two people experiencing the same childhood and they'll have different ways of interpreting the way their parents were to them and what they thought about the experiences. Some will have a very positive take on it. Other people will have a very negative take, depending on how they feel and the way that, you know, their attitude is and what have you. Some of those that have the more, what I call, traumatic or scary experiences, which obviously, you know, can be extremely traumatic, I have found that once we've worked with them and they've got a better understanding, and that may be through hypnosis, leave went on, actually didn't, you know, from this broad spectrum of experience, and I'm talking about the Whitby Strieber kind of classic, which is probably only about 20-30% of my clients have that kind of experience, which is the classic, you know, waking up at night, feeling a sense that something or some beings are around them, you know, the high-pitched sound, not being able to move, and then feeling a sense of being moved or taken somewhere, which, as I say, is more of the Whitby Strieber classic, and waking up maybe with marks on the body, etc. But there's those that actually don't feel so much more human as actually part of another family that doesn't belong on Earth. These are the people that say to me, I don't belong here, my family's out there, and I'm just, you know, I really don't like being on this planet. I find human beings quite strange, and I really don't want to be here. Many of them say they feel like they've been adopted, they feel they don't really connect with their siblings, they feel very different, they are often very drawn to the healing fields and find literally being on this planet very hard and alien to their other fellow humans. Now, this has really been a revelation for me, because initially I thought everyone must be traumatized, but that's not the case at all. For some, it seems that they have a sense or a greater awareness that this isn't just the only reality, and that their interaction with these beings is very normal and actually makes more sense than their interaction with humans. So again, I've had my paradigm moved and switched around, Joe, so many times that I just have to be open to patterns rather than saying, well, this is one thing and this is another. And certainly on the craft, there are some that are educated as well as having healing procedures or as well as being taught on the craft. I've even had one lady who I've done 17 hours of regression with that actually talks about on the craft having this super conscious telepathic communication, being taught how to parent her children, one of them particularly is a genetic mix, and also being shown how to use her mind in a way which is not only using telepathy, but using her mind to create. Now, this takes it to a whole new realm, and a lot of people are not aware that this is what's going on these craft.
What, they're not, and there's a lot, you see, that's the thing, though. Seems a lot of education going on in these crafts across the board in a lot of different ways. A lot of different studies being done. Everybody wants you to say, oh, well, what's the alien agenda? Well, guys, they seem to have a multi-agenda going on here.
Absolutely.
And they seem to be covering a wide scope of things, from anywhere from, DNA studies to hybrids to emotional studies to trying to bring I don't want to say bring the species up, but contactees seem to be, very intuitive, I guess would be an easier way of saying it. But they seem to be very intuitive. They seem to catch on to things quickly. Most of the ones I've met are very bright. Most of them are very articulate. Occasionally you run across a couple that are withdrawn, but in general, they're usually successful people. That's what everybody thinks when you talk about an alien abductee or a contactee, they're thinking of some poor bum living on the street somewhere got abducted by aliens, but I don't think most people understand that a lot of these people, a good majority of these people, are professionals that are working in our fields and all different places, from scientists to doctors to lawyers to politicians, that are dealing with this in silence, unless they can find someone like myself or Mary or one or two of the other researchers out there that have support groups. If they don't, then they're dealing with this alone. And guys, I got to be honest with you, it's not an easy thing to deal with. Especially if you're an analytical or a scientific person, thinking that aliens are coming and getting you in the daytime, in the evening, at night, because a lot of contacts happen in the daytime, it's hard to deal with. I can imagine being a lawyer and seeing a little gray guy standing by my bed, or a doctor for that matter. We could always hope that George Bush was seeing a little gray alien. I'm sorry. I will retract that statement so y'all don't cut us off the air tonight. But it is kind of funny like that, and it has a lot to do with everything that they see needs to be translated back, I guess, into something that everyone can understand, because, when you're talking about, telepathic abilities on the ship, like downloads, you know what I'm talking about when we talk about downloads, when they're downloading information straight into our contactee's head?
Absolutely. One eight-year-old called it knowledge bombs in her head that made her head hurt sometimes, because many of the children have access to information they've got no way of knowing. I remember Mike Oram, that's written a book about his own experiences in England, does it mean in other dimensions, and he says in it that he told his mum at 4 years old that there was going to be a shift of consciousness on this planet, not in her lifetime, but in his. And he said, my mother never forgot that conversation. Now, he was four at the time. It's language that a four-year-old just doesn't speak of. This is the kind of thing, but again, downloading of information, knowledge bombs, as this eight-year-old called them.
That's pretty cool. I like that, knowledge bomb. Well, basically that's what it is. All of a sudden there's just this information in your head, and you didn't learn it from a book, you didn't look it up on the internet, it's there. And that's something else I think that some of them have a hard time dealing with, Mary, is the fact that they do have this information, and they know that this information just was in their head, and they really know where it came. They know where it comes from, but a lot of people, a lot of the contactees don't want to admit that aliens are giving them knowledge, but these people are having knowledge of things that there's no way they should have knowledge of. I've watched people just change careers and fields you know, like when they go through the awakening process, they seem to wake up, they realize it. I've watched them. A lot of them have just, in America they call them walk-ins sometimes because they think it's like a spiritual walk-in, but they just have, they wake up, they're a different person, they realize they're not alone, they've got this knowledge in their head, and they start using it. And it seems to be very beneficial. I mean, is it the same in Australia? It sounds like
It is. Absolutely. And that's why, you know, when I wrote Awakening, it was about us waking up, because it seems like this experience acts as a catalyst in the same way near-death experiences do, or, you know, profound grief issues may wake us up to understanding a greater reality or a multidimensional reality. And the interesting thing too, Joanne, as you know, I'm researching, is what the ways they manifest this waking up. Some people come out with strange languages that are more familiar to them than their own native tongue. They write strange scripts and complex geometric mandalas or drawings. They seem to manifest a lot of really unusual creative and intuitive expressions that seem to be related to this whole waking up process.
Yeah, and it does. Now, let me ask you this while we're in the language. Well, first off, while I'm thinking about this, give them a website where they can find the book. Guys, you got to check this book out, I'm telling you. Mary's done a lot of research. She's very well versed in this. You need to go get the book, sit down and read it, especially if you're an abductee. Contact these abductees. You definitely need to get the book and read it. But tell them right quick where they can find it at, Mary.
Right, okay. Well, you can. It's actually Avatar Publications is publishing it for me in Canada, but it's distributed by Ingram, New Leaf, Baker & Taylor, and online with Barnes & Noble and also Amazon. So there's a range of places that you can get Awakening.
Oh, God, come on. That sounds like it's really easy to find. There must be a Barnes & Noble in every corner in every country on the planet. they're everywhere. I mean, if you can't find it, shame on you. I'm sure if not, I'm sure one of the online bookstores carry it as well. So, or, well, what am I saying? Barnes & Noble online, too. There you go. There you go. Y'all should check it out, though. Now, for you, though, I mean, all of us have our own reasons why we got involved in this. What was it? I mean, a friend, family, something just caught your eye? I'm curious.
Well, when I went into private practice about 13 years ago, somebody came to me who said, look, I've heard you're open-minded. And he said, this has been happening to me. And he was a middle-aged, very articulate gentleman who said, you know, the classic thing, he'd been taken at night, so had his partner, waking up with a shaved area on his leg in the morning, strange marks, even an imprint of a sort of alien being, if you like, on his chest. It was quite incredible, literally imprinted on his chest. And he said the kids are having these marks as well. He said all the relatives wouldn't come to the house because they thought there were demons there. And he said, and particularly his partner was absolutely terrified. And he said, what can you help me? He says, because the support groups for everything, he said, but for this, nobody wants to know you. He said, they just think you're a loony. And this intrigued me because I was doing advanced counseling at the time at the Wesley Institute, and I took this case study with me to supervision to a whole group of professionals. And interestingly, not one of them suggested that this gentleman was crazy. They all started to tell me about their own paranormal experiences. So what I'd acted as was a kind of catalyst for other people sharing their own unexplained phenomena. So it really was bizarre. But what it did show me was how little we really know and of what we call, you know, this multidimensional human experience that we all have. We all have intuition. We all have knowings and feelings we can't explain. We all know we can't maybe quantify them in third-dimensional terms. But basically, that started me on a mission. I wanted to understand. And interestingly, from that gentleman, I advertised a support group. I've got 12 people in the first time I advertised saying that all had these experiences. And then from that time, I decided that this would be an area that I would support people because, as he said, it's so hard to find support for this kind of experience. And people are afraid to go to conventional sources like psychologists and psychiatrists because they're fearful. They're fearful of how they're going to be judged.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's why it all started.
Yeah. Well, no, that I'm glad to hear you got into it for that. I mean, that's an excellent reason, actually. Because, you know, like I said, everybody has their own reasons for getting involved in this, and that's one of the better ones I've heard over the years, I have to tell you. And actually, I'm grateful you did, because support's important. I have noticed with contactees and abductees, when they're given support, they blossom. or awakening, mm-hmm. as the book suggests, the title of the book suggests. But they do. And it's amazing. And you know what, guys? And, you know, I was not this kind of person when I got involved with this, by the way. But I am really happy these days. People write me all the time, thank you, you help me in ways you can't understand. That just amazes me. I didn't think I'd be out here helping people with, you know, get their lives together. I'm not a psychologist by any means, guys, and you're not going to give anybody advice like that, but when it comes to abduction research, I will help people through it, or I'll refer them to people that can help them, or I'll point them to one of our support groups or one of the online groups they can come hang out and talk to somebody. I'm amazed that once you let people talk about this, how much they remember on their own without the use of regression or drugs or any kind of heavy anything other than chat. I mean, a lot of them will just within a flood of memory. Does that happen for y'all, Mary? I mean, once people start to, like, open up a little bit, it seems like their memories come rushing in?
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of the time, as you quite rightly say, anyway, you know, a good 8% have conscious memory. You know, like the 5-year-old that said he didn't mind going through the walls, and they teach him more on the ships than they do at school. But the bottom line is with this is that even with the questionnaire that I put out, it acts as a trigger for people saying, oh my goodness, it's like there's been lots of isolated little events that they haven't sort of put together. But once they do, it's like, you know, this revelation. And for many of them, like you say, Joe, all you really need to do is be open to listening and respect their understanding and experience. Because, you know, they'll say, often as not to me, and that may have, all I've actually done is listen. They feel like this huge weight has been lifted off their shoulders. And they, you know, I may only see them once or twice, and off they go, and they're a different person.
They are, because they realize, first off, that it's real. Secondly, they're not alone. And third, if they do need someone to talk to, there is someone to talk to. And I tell people, kind of like alcohol or drug, you know, if you ever need, you call me, here's my number. You know, if you, you know, something happened, or you're going through an experience that you can't, call us. You know, as long as it's extraterrestrial related, because, I mean, if it's anything else, we're not psychologists. But that's something I find interesting, too, in the last 4 or 5 years in the States. A lot more psychiatrists are taking this out of the loony hatch and putting this more into a physically real experience. Even though they don't want to admit that it's extraterrestrial, they are saying that, no, this seems to be something, you know, real. This is a real trauma that's happening in these people's lives. This isn't something in their head. But it's about 50-50 in the States. I don't know how it is in Australia, but it's about 50-50 here, I guess.
Well, I had an interesting little story around that, Joe, is that Tracy Taylor is one of the ladies that does all the geometric drawings, as well as having seen mantis beings and lizard-like beings and all this kind of thing. Once she'd actually been and shown me a lot of her drawings and started to integrate this, she deliberately put herself out in Melbourne to a panel of 8 psychiatrists, and she kept nothing back. She told them about the beings she saw, she showed the drawings, she talked about going on a craft at 5 years old, and how they'd given her all this information. And after this interview that she had with them, not one of those psychiatrists told her that they thought she was crazy. In fact, they all wished her well. Now, that in itself shows that, you know, there is an openness on a more private level with a lot of people in the professional scene. Now, I will also tell you that I was asked to be interviewed for a Dr. Focus magazine. This is a medical journal. About 3 years ago, they rang me up and asked me for an interview about my work, and it was actually a 4-page spread in the Dr. Focus magazine here, which went right through all the medical practices and hospitals in Australia. And I have been contacted by GPs, one I remember particularly, that ordered 3 of my books because he thought he had at least 2 of his patients with this experience.
Wow.
So you see, it really does show that there's a lot more openness on the quiet. But I'm still frustrated, Joe, because I want them to finally admit, you know, that the emperor has no clothes. You know, come on, guys.
You're preaching to the choir here. So, no, because I understand it. Because, you know, when I talk to different people, it doesn't matter what profession they're in, most of them have had some kind of, I'm not talking about had some kind of weird experience. And they want to talk about it. But
yeah.
They don't want to talk about it in the open. And they don't realize that the guy sitting next to them has probably had some kind of weird experience.
Yeah.
And if they would talk about it, they would find out. But for some reason, in society, and it amazes me that this is all over the whole planet, it's not just in one country, it still seems to be taboo to talk about these subjects. And if a person says, well, I've seen something that might have been an alien or a ghost or some just something weird, of course everybody wants to think they're crazy when they're probably not. I don't know, maybe two decades, maybe three. Maybe when we relearn religious tolerance, we'll learn how to, that people talk about their real feelings. I don't know. I'm not hopeful it's going to happen in our lifetime, Mary.
I'm a little bit more optimistic
for
the simple reason that I am seeing more openness than I did 5 years ago. And that sort of really helps. There was a Reader's Digest poll done here about 18 months ago where they discovered at least one in five had seen some kind of strange lights or felt that they'd had some interaction with intelligences. So, you know, that's one in five in Australia, which, of course, is the tip of the iceberg. So we know that we're talking about millions, possibly goodness knows how many millions, but it's a matter of acceptance. And I think, you know, I look at it this way. If you told me 30 years ago as a nurse that doctors or GPs would do acupuncture in their surgeries, I'd have probably laughed at you and said, what, sticking needles is going to actually help somebody get well? What a joke. I have no problem. My daughter's a naturopath. I've got no problem and fully understand how useful and incredible acupuncture can be. That's my mindset from 30 years ago to look at where I am now. So I think people are a lot more intelligently aware and a lot more likely now to open to this than they ever have been.
Oh, I agree. I think it is getting better. Before it's going to be open to where you can just talk about it on the street corner or in the cubicle next to your employee, I know when you get people together and you let them talk, if you get them in a club or a bar and let them talk, or if you get them away from what I call an official environment, they open up. But it seems like when they're just walking the streets or they're at work, it's just, they won't. And I don't know if that's going to change or not. I mean, it's weird, but, you know, because, like I said, most people I talk to are more than willing. I'll give you an example. I was in a local newspaper. I'm standing there, and one of the girls asked if she had seen me in a paper, and she starts telling me about her UFO sighting she's seen. Next thing I know, I'm not kidding you, there's like 11 people in the bank standing there telling me about their different things they had experienced, including the vice president of the bank. And, you know, so it tells you right there that they're willing to talk about it, but they're only willing to talk about it to where people aren't going to think they're crazy. So I guess you're going to be fortunate because they'll talk to us about it.
Joe, I think that it's wonderful that you've done that. I have actually been chatting away to my financial advisor in the bank, and the next thing he's asking me about my work, so I tell him. And he tells me he's been fascinated with UFOs and what have you all his life. You know, I have the real estate agent come round my house and see all the aliens on the walls and what have you, and tell me about, confidentially, that he's had sightings, but not to say anything to his colleagues because they'll think he's crazy. I have people coming to do the landscaping. At least two of them had seen craft in the sky. I found that the more open that we are, and I think it's a bit like the 100th monkey, you know, when they say that all we need is 10% of the planet to be open to this, and then it seems to become part of the collective. And I suspect we're getting very close to that because, you know, everywhere I go now, I mean, it seems like, you know, I only have to say that this is my work, and somebody's telling me about a sighting they have or experience that they've had.
Oh, yeah, it's true. As a matter of fact, I was in one of our office buildings today picking up some payroll for one of my companies because I do construction. That's what I do. And I'm in there, and sure enough, one of the guys, and he says, you're the UFO guy. And he goes off, starts telling me about something that happened to him a couple of weeks ago. I'm like, okay. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, I wanted to listen, but I was in work mode. I'm like, gosh, you know, I do have to make a living. But it's how it is. I mean, people are willing to talk about it, and as long as you're open about it, you're not going to make fun of what they'll talk to you. And I try to get that across to everybody, but still, there's the giggle factor. No matter what, are just going to giggle. And then when they do that, everybody seems to just shut up, you know, I guess, because nobody wants to be laughed at. I think it's good to laugh at yourself, but, you know, most people just don't want to be laughed at, I guess. So it's something we're going to work on. But I agree with you. I think it's going to change. I'm just not sure at what speed it's going to change. Sometimes I think it's going to be fast. Sometimes I'm like, okay, we're riding a tortoise. But, you know, because I've seen significant change in the last 20 years since I got into, well, the last 25 years since I got ufology. And 25 years ago, what we're doing right now would have been completely unacceptable. Somebody would have probably shut the radio show down by now. And there's other things that are discussed openly now. But still, I think it'll change, Mary, when you see this weekly in the mainstream news, you know, the national world news, I guess I should say. When you start seeing things like what we're talking about in the world news consistently, then you'll see a change around the country, around the world, because then people will be, well, hell, Larry King, I mean, not Larry King, CNN's talking about it all the time, man, it's got to be real. Or one of the other major agencies that are out there talking about it. But right now, for some reason, even when they do talk about it, they always have a giggle factor involved in it, or a skeptic, or, you know, they're not talking about it as data like we talk about it. And that's really the way they should present it. You know, say, look, people aren't ignorant. Most people I find in the world are fairly intelligent. If you give them the data, or show them where they can even find the data, most times it will convince themselves. And I don't know if you find that or not, but I do find that most people, when they're pointed in the right direction, most people tend to find this out on their own. Any coaxing or any help, they come to the, you know, conclusion that the planet's being visited on their own. So.
Absolutely. And what I also point out is the Disclosure Project. And also, I mean, I spoke to the Honourable Paul Hellyer, the ex-Defence Minister of Canada, when I was doing a conference at ExoPolitics last, you know, in Hawaii. And this is a defence minister that didn't know when he was actually a defence minister of Canada about this, but since then has found out and is one of the most vocal of all that's saying that this has to be disclosed now from, you know, what the government knows. And we know now that France has opened its files as well as MOD in England. The Ministry of Defence has opened its files. The bottom line is now that it seems that, you know, some governments at least are finally accepting that the public has a right to know. And this is the kind of material I put out when I'm seeking it in what I call the more scientific general public arenas. I mean, I spoke at Oxford University last year in a world tour, and when I spoke there, I was speaking with an astrophysicist, professor at Manchester University, and what was interesting is that he was coming from, you know, that you know, intelligent life would be very minimal out in the universe. And here he is, very credible and academic. I just spoke about the scientific data, the genetics, that, you know, show that we could very well be a mix of, I mean, I talk about the 223 genomes that are in no other species on this planet, for example, as part of the fact that we were an intelligent design. I mean, I go into the science of the reality in terms of appearances. You know, people can go missing from their beds and found outside, often with strange, you know, their clothes inside out or back to front, sometimes missing. I talk about, you know, the missing time episodes people have. I talk about this going through families. I talk about the ground traces. I talk about the fact that it's been hidden for the last 50 or 60 years. And I have to say that in this forum at Oxford, despite the high credibility of two of the other speakers, another one was a fellow of the British Interplanetary Society, both basically saying the opposite to me, I won the forum. So what does that say? You know, it says that people listen to the scientific evidence that's there.
They do. Most people I find are intelligent. It's just when you get them in a group, sometimes they get a little goofy. But usually, people are intelligent. And if you present them and you treat them like adults and you present them with the data, they'll usually take it for what it is. See, that's why, you know, everybody's always saying, oh, you don't want to publicly speak about this. These people are going to eat you alive. But I got to say, most people seem to be quite receptive, and it doesn't really matter. We were at a conference about 2 years ago in D.C. in a nice hotel, and I think it was a Hilton or something. And these people are coming and going, and you know, we're there for the conference, for the UFO, for the exopolitical conference. That's what we're there for. And all these people are coming and going. Well, they're asking. You know, I'm outside smoking a cigarette, which is bad. I know, bad. But I was outside smoking a cigarette. And these people just stop at the door and ask, and then they start telling you. And these are people who are just in D.C. for whatever reason they're there for, not for the conference. But I find almost every one of them were interested in this. They had an interest in it, you know, but they didn't want to go into the UFO thing because somebody might see them. But they didn't mind talking to us UFO people outside the door. But still, at least they took the time to ask, you know. At least they did show some interest. So I do have hope, Mary, I really do. I mean, I have hope that the future is going to be a much easier and a much more open place for this. But, dude, I don't want to put you in a hot speed, but Disclosure, because we were talking about the Disclosure Project earlier, and I know Stephen Bassett's always talking about a year or two. Of course, me and him argue about that all the time because I think he's nuts, and I don't think it's going to happen. But what do you think? A year, 2 years, 5 years, 12 years? I got, ladies and gentlemen, this is not a prediction, okay? I'm just giving Mary a hard time here. Like, so please don't take this for any other than what it is, all right? Well, I just want to tell him, Mary, because me and you'll both be getting emails.
Well, look, Joe, it's really a good question in one sense, because people really do want to know.
Mm-hmm.
I would refer people to Project Camelot site, because there they've got a wonderful interview with Robert, who is the grandfather of ufology, who I have utmost respect for, and he actually believes that the 2012 is about mass landings, about the craft actually showing themselves publicly to everyone. I've also heard a similar thing from a few other people. I also speak to a lot of experiencers that have had experiences on the craft and what their understanding of this, and many of them do feel that something like that's going to happen, that there's going to be something that the world cannot deny in terms of they're going to be seen everywhere. And as we've seen now more and more right across the planet, people are videotaping and UFOs all the time. And even now there's even, you know, videotape of the beings themselves, you know. I think this is what is happening with a lot of the technology. It's able to see a broader light frequency, and it's picking up, you know, not only strange orbs and things, but it's actually picking up strange anomalous shapes as well. And I think ultimately that through this technology and through, you know, the fact that people are opening up and seeing these beings and craft as well, that I'm actually going to be shown this reality. Whether it's in 3 or 4 years' time, or a little bit more, or a little bit less, I think that's going to be up for debate. But I do think that this is definitely going to happen.
Oh, I think it's going to happen, and I do think it happens. Well, sometime between now and 2100, I picking a date is almost impossible. But you know, I notice a lot of the ufologists and a lot of the New Agers and a lot of the other people are leaning towards the 2012 date. You know, and it has a lot to do with the Mayans, because the Mayans said at the end of life as we know it and the start of the Golden Age, or the start of the fourth age of man. And you know, when you listen to a statement like that, you got to kind of think, oh wait, what can end life as we know it, but yet still allow for the start of a Golden Age? Because I mean, if it's a new Gora asteroid, I'm not thinking the Golden Age is going to be starting right away there. So you know, it kind of limits you, and you know, full out blown extraterrestrial contact where the whole world knows would change the world in ways we wouldn't understand, and probably trigger the start of the Golden Age, a more united planet, a more united front, maybe even some technology from the aliens. So it's a good argument. I don't know if it's going to happen or not. Guys, do not hold me to this, okay? I'm not saying that the aliens are coming in 2012, because I really don't know. I mean, I would love, you know, from what I get from the contactees I work with, and, you know, I cause well over 7,000 cases these days, I get a sense that, yes, it's imminent and it's coming. And it's going to be, you know, either in our lifetime or our grandkids' lifetime. But, you know, I couldn't tell you for sure. And I really think that has more to do with mankind than it does with the aliens. I think they're really waiting for a more mature planet to present itself to. Because I think we make them nervous. I really do. I make us. Humans make me nervous. I know we got to make the aliens nervous. But it's a good possibility. I'm hoping, Mary, it's in our lifetime, because I know we're not that much different in age, and I'm hoping it's in our lifetime.
Nice. Joe, if that's the case, I mean, as I mentioned, Mike Oram, when he was 4, saying that there was going to be a shift in consciousness in his lifetime. Mike Oram actually is the same age as me, and I'm in my
late
50s.
That's a good sign, then. Well, you see, it might be the 2012 thing, then. It might be it, Mary. I mean, we might be hitting on the right one, which is kind of, that would be nice. I'll have to come visit in Australia. We'll have a big party. a big coming out party, huh? I don't think that came out right. Anyway, y'all know what I'm talking about here. Somebody asked me the other day, because they heard me talking and laughing like this while we were having a UFO conversation. I said, God, have a little humor. I mean, it's aliens. Yes, we know they're visiting planet. We know they're abducting people. And yes, we take it very serious, but we do this every day, people. This isn't a passing interest or a waning interest. This is something that's part of our lives. I mean, for you, I mean, this it sounds like it's in your life like it's in mine. I mean, this is just in every part of your life, isn't it?
Look, I can't imagine my life without this research. I mean, it's so fascinating and intriguing, and I think it's the big questions. I mean, to be honest, Joe, we're all the same when we go through a process. For me, contact, there were three things people wanted to know. First, is it real? Secondly, if it's real, how do I fit it into my belief system? So you have to look at your paradigm and all the different areas where, you know, this could fit or not fit. And then thirdly, what does it all mean? What's it about? What does it say about me? And I think that if you're a researcher in this, you go through exactly the same process as an experiencer. We're all trying, at first I had to prove to myself this was real and I wasn't conning people into believing something that wasn't real. So I probably was more skeptical than most people because I wanted to be sure that professionally and with integrity. From that I thought, well, how do I fit this into my belief system? And like you, I came up with a conventional Christian belief that I thought, now how do I fit it into that? Mm-hmm. And then I went into the anthropology of it, the biological side of it. I went into the psychological side of it. I went into our history, our religious understanding, all these areas of knowledge to see how it would actually fit. And then finally, well, okay, so what does this say about me? You know, where's it taking us? What's this about, you know, consciousness in terms of, you know, what is it saying in terms of who I am, where I've come from, you know, what's it all about? All these huge questions, and that just, you know, you can't stop that journey. Once it started, you are constantly joining the dots, and God knows where the dots are going to go. You get some answers, and you find that just begets another question. So I'm probably going to be joining these dots till the day I cark it, and cark it in Australian means, you know, you die. So I shall probably be doing this till the day I die, and hopefully I'll have a few more answers, but probably just as many questions.
Well, I just got an email from Jana. She's in Sydney, Australia. She wants to know what can she expect if she contacts the Australian Close Encounter Resource Network, and do you think, could you tell her about if some of these cases, how some of these cases could be traumatic and how some of these cases could be enlightening? I think she's been reading your site.
Oh, okay.
Jana in Sydney, thanks, by the way, for writing in, and I'm glad to know y'all listening to us down there in Australia.
Look, all she needs to do, she can email me, which mostly I get. Some will phone. I usually suggest that they do the questionnaire on the website first, because that's really good to get them to have a sense of whether this is a reality for them or it's relevant to them. Then if she's got questions, again, she can email me. I answer all my emails, or she can phone me. And regarding the traumatic and not traumatic, as I say, there's a broad range of those that have traumatic experiences, but they're not necessarily because of what has been done on the craft. Sometimes the trauma is the fear of not knowing.
Yes.
And that creates, that's often what the trauma can be. Sometimes it is because when they're on the craft, they actually don't know what's going on. Many times it's medical procedures. Genetic material is taken. Sometimes there's even healing procedures done. I think Preston Dennett's book, 100 Documented Healings on Board Craft that were, you know, verified by doctors or, medical doctors as well, is very credible. But I have come across so many people who've had healings on the craft, including having their teeth, the amalgam taken out of their teeth, believe it or not. So, you know, there's a lot of really positive stuff there. But what I say to people is that, you know, each individual case is different, and we have to take on the part of it as well, Joe, which a lot of people don't know about. And that, the MyLab, is the military pseudo-abductions that are extremely traumatic and have nothing to do with extraterrestrial interventions at all. Mm-hmm. People need to know that is a very much a reality.
Yeah, and they do, and that's the thing. Well, I tell people all the time when they come to me about I've been abducted by aliens, I said, well, I'll tell you what, I said, why don't you let me be the judge of that? Because, you know, we've had it from traumatic experiences as childhood, ranging from anywhere from molestation to being beat to a lot of other things, from bad problems and marriages and stuff that somehow or another manifest into an alien abduction, which, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, it's not paranormal, demonic, or alien. It is definitely something psychological. Then we run into stuff sometimes that I would definitely put into the paranormal area. I'm not going to say demonic or angelic, but I would put it into the paranormal area and take it away from extraterrestrial research. And it's part of what we do, though. You know, I mean, you're going to run into these cases because it's hard to tell sometimes. You know, somebody asked me one day, how do you tell between alien, an alien abduction and demonic possession? I said, well, do your research. You know, check the person out. I said, demonic possession is usually going to reveal itself pretty quickly. Usually something that's possessed by a demon or something along those lines usually manifests quite quickly. So, and aliens tend to manifest in a different way, I guess I should say.
Well, the interesting thing that I've discovered also about the difference between spirits and entities and these intelligences, that people can seem to tell the difference energetically. Anyone who's clairvoyant or mediumistic can often say this one was definitely spirit, where this one is definitely an ET or whatever, and they can learn to distinguish between the two. But for those that are perhaps opening up psychically or multidimensionally, for a while they can be really fearful of all energies, whether they're spirit energies or whether they're entities or whether they're extraterrestrial. And sometimes you can get a sense of it if you trust that intuitive knowing. You know, you can sort of get a sense of whether or not this is, you know, Uncle Joe that's come to visit you or Grandma that's letting you know they're around, or whether or not this is an extraterrestrial energy. And I think that people have to start learning to trust their own inner resources and understanding with all of this, Joe.
I agree. I send all ghosties and dead people to Portal, to Paranormal Radio, to the Tuesday Mills and Angelica Thomas, that they can deal with that. Actually, no, Tuesday is probably one of the most gifted psychics I've ever met. I don't know how she knows what she knows about people, but she is extremely gifted. One of the very few psychics I've met. She's a contact agent. She don't want to admit to it, but she definitely is. she knows a visitor and all, but she don't want to even talk about it. She's like, look, let me deal with this in my own way. I'm like, okay. But sooner or later, you're going to come to the realization that these little things walking around your room aren't ghosties. No, but she is. She's very gifted. I shouldn't pick on her. But I don't know. You know, I know there's a lot of work going into this, like from people like yourself and myself and a few others in the field. But one of these days, I guess I'm going to see you on Montel like I seen Yvonne Smith. I seen her on Montel Williams the other day. See, this is what happens when you get famous. You go get on Montel. Now, you know, I was thinking about that, though, really, Mary, to be serious. One of these days, if one of us ever make it to, like, Oprah Winfrey, then it's an open in our society. That's when you truly know, ladies and gentlemen, that this has been taken seriously. When someone like myself or Mary Rodwell or one of the other better-known researchers in the field get on Oprah Winfrey, you will know that society has really taken this to be serious. I hate to say that. I know it sounds hokey, but it's true. And you know what? She's getting closer, Mary. She's getting closer.
Well, I'd like to say that just off the top of my head that she's our kids that I talk about. You
she
know,
probably is.
The new human.
You know what? I agree with that, too. She probably is. I would imagine that a lot of these people out there that have these off feelings, they probably are star kids, but they probably don't realize it. They know there's something different about them, and they know they kind of walk out of phase with everyone else, but they don't quite understand why. And it's kind of a shame, because if they did, they would probably even sell more than what they have, because there may be something in the back of their head that kind of holds them back a little bit. But still, you know, I agree with you. She probably is. Anybody, she took herself from nowhere to where she is today, and seems to be quite confident in how she is and how she appears. So maybe we ought to write her a letter and ask her. You think you're a contactee or starting?
Well, you know, the thing is, what we've got to do is actually open up the patterns of this experience, mm-hmm. so that it isn't just about what I call the classic, you know, kind of experience. Because, as I said, a majority of those that have experience are not within that framework. They just know they're different and have always felt different. You know, a sense that they've got a mission or purpose on this planet, but they don't know what it is. And the times I hear that, I wish I had a dollar for every time I'd be a millionaire, you know?
No, that's the truth, too.
So there's a real sense of knowing that they've got something to do, but they just don't know what it is, you know? And where does that come from?
Well, we know where it comes from, but they don't. Mm-hmm. And it's you know, it is. It's part of who and what they are. And, you know, it's got to be nagging. It just has to be. And the bad part is, and I know they don't realize this, but a lot of them are going to pass it on to their kids.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't understand that, you know, then their kids are going to be having their feelings, and they're going to be like, well, how can my kids be experiencing the same thing? And if they do the research, they'll find out what it is, but if they don't, then it's, and I feel for those people, because I know it's hard going through life with this stuff. There's just no, especially as a teenager, can you imagine going through adolescence, then in through into your teens with being an alien abductee, especially with what we know goes on in those years. You know, that's some of the more intense experimentation happens in those years. And still have to deal with puberty? Oh, Lord, I don't know how they don't all go crazy. But that's what support groups are for. And I do notice, though, Mary, that the young people, or more and more of them, are seeking out alike people, I guess I should say. you know, they don't seem to be as scared as the generations, two generations ago did to go seeking this in a public forum. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I've got to take a break because I skipped the first one. So we're going to be back in about 8 minutes. I want everyone to please stay tuned to UFO Undercover. I'm your host, Joe Mantello. I'm sitting speaking with Mary Rodwell, and we're going to pick up on alien abductions as soon as we return. So please stay tuned.
You're listening to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
You've got to listen to ICAR That's International Community for Alien Research, www.icar1.com. As you know, I'm Irish.
Hi, this is Rob Simone, and I want to tell you about my brand new show here on the Paranormal Radio Network. Each week, I bring you the most interesting people on the planet, the most in-depth discussions, and the most controversial issues. We'll go where no talk show dares to go. Join me every week for the Rob Simone Talk Show here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Do you like to ask about everything? Would you like to escape from your proverbial box? Just leap out and explore our world in ways you've never imagined? You can have that opportunity. As we grow and expand, new features will be added, allowing you to experience radio programming at a fresh new level. I invite you to join me, November Hansen, host of Voice of the People. Together, we can expand our horizons and peer into multifaceted possibilities. This program will broadcast live Saturday evenings on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Online shopping this holiday season has just gotten a whole lot easier. FlowerGirlPrincess.com is ready for all your special occasion needs. We carry Flower Girl, Pageant, Bridesmaid, Prom, and Sweet 16 gowns, as well as a collection of designer holiday dresses for girls. Ordering from us is easy, secure, and fast. Remember, FlowerGirlPrincess.com will turn your little flower girl into a princess for her special day. Visit us online today and enter to win a free dress of your choice. FlowerGirlPrincess.com.
Good evening, good afternoon, or good morning, wherever you may be. I am Sean Lonker, your host on the Midnight Highway Radio on the Paranormal Radio Network. Come join me on Saturday night, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And together we can take a ride down the Midnight Highway. My topics include UFOs, ghosts, near death, and many other various subjects regarding the paranormal. My goal is to seek the truth, find the answers that we all so deeply crave. So when the witch sings on Saturday nights, guys and girls, be sure to check me out. You can also visit me at www.midnighthighwayradio.com. Don't forget, Saturday nights, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Take care, guys.
Hello, this is Trish Sheridan for UFO Global Focus. Starting Sunday, November 18th, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network will be broadcasting our new program. Each UFO Global Focus show, airing Sundays 2 to 4 p.m. Central Time, will center on a particular international and study aspect of ufology. We hope you'll listen and join the discussion.
Light up your night with The Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Are you ready to know
that angels, ETs, and light beings walk beside you?
Are you ready to know
that not only are you their creation, you may be them as well?
Are you ready
to know that you have been trapped in your own beliefs, in your own mind, and never knowing who and what you truly are?
Let's explore these concepts and theories. Anyway, join us Sunday nights, 8 Pacific, 11 Eastern. I'm Joshua James, your host of Cinema Lights and Paranormal Radio Network. See you Sunday.
Welcome to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo.
don't know, be considered. I mean, I can't consider myself an expert abduction. An expert, because there's no, you know, title that goes along with this. But I mean, how would you consider yourself an expert?
I don't like the word expert.
Yes, just like me.
There's a very good quote that I have. You know, that anyone who feels that they an expert in human knowledge, you know, is shipwrecked by the laughter of the gods, as Albert Einstein says. You know. But what I will say is that we're open-minded enough to explore it more widely and more open-mindedly than most. And that, by the way, doesn't equate to gullibility. A lot of people think if you're open-minded that you're gullible as well and you'll believe anything. I think what it's saying is that we're open to what we don't know and we're prepared to follow those dots to wherever it takes us.
Yeah, and I agree. Well, I tell people all the time, open-mindedness is a good thing until you become an airhead. And you know, well, it's true, you know, because sometimes being too open-minded, and skepticism is the same way. Being skeptical is a good thing, but when it comes to the point where your mind is completely closed to anything else, no, it's a bad thing, people. So there's a happy medium in there where you got you're open-minded, but yet still have some skepticalness to you, so that you can see both sides to the argument, and that's where y'all need to be. Don't go far right and be an airhead. Don't go far left and be closed-minded. Find that neutral ground in there. Because I'll be honest with you, Mary, a lot of these people I meet are closed-minded. When you bring up, and I'll never understand this, and I don't know if you've experienced this or not, but since I've gotten into mainstream ufology, I've noticed that several more prominent ufologists, when you bring up the word alien abduction, they act like you just set them on fire or something. They do not want to talk about this. They're thinking, oh, no, y'all shouldn't be talking about this ufology. It's not credible. And I'm thinking, what the hell are you talking about? It's not. Without contact and alien abduction, ufology is not credible.
Exactly.
You know, we're the proof that these aliens are coming here, not the flying things in the sky.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that. Yeah, I'm sorry, guys, I know I get a little passionate about that, but it's true. I mean, you know.
It's absolutely true.
So, I've been, go ahead, I'm sorry, I'm just ranting, go ahead.
I so agree with you. You know, the nuts and bolts is really important, and
yeah.
No one's denying that it isn't. But, you know, people are really over the fact there's bright lights in the sky. Yes, guys, there's millions of hours of footage to prove that. But, you know, they're intelligent, and they are actually visiting us. That's what's important. So why? And let's look at that, because that's really what it's all about, not continually showing the same thing. In the UK, it's identical to that as well. So many experiences in the UK have come to me and said, you know, UFO groups are not in the least interested in my experiences, even though, you know, they're fascinated by the latest. But the bottom line is, guys, that's just, you know, letting us know they're there. It's not about what this is all about at all.
Yeah, there. I'm hoping that everything changes and the world becomes enlightened sometime in the next year, but I'll be nice. It's just one of those things. It's tough, you know, when you got to deal with this. And, you know, somebody the other day says, well, you know, y'all do radio and all, and this is just a farce, and y'all are trying to make money off of poor people who think aliens have visited. And I'm thinking, you're a moron. Money, I'm thinking, there is no money in ufology anywhere except for what we take out of our pockets.
Yes.
But it's, you got to get this across to the everyday man, because, you know, there's... That's what they think. I mean, we're at a convention one time, and he said, oh, well, you must have a book for sale. I'm like, well, actually, I don't. And, oh, well, you must be selling a CD. I said, well, no, I don't, which there's nothing wrong with, because several of my good friend researchers have books and CDs out, and I think people should buy them. Because you know, they're not going to get much face time with people like us. I mean, if you happen to catch us at a conference or on a radio show like tonight, yeah, you might get to talk to us, but it's not the same as sitting down there and reading through a 200, 500, 700-page book. You're going to get much more in-depth detail. And then at least you can take that, you can look at it, and then you can call Mary on the phone and say, why the hell did you say this on page 55?
Yes.
But, you know, so I'm telling you, you know, you can do it. I mean, you can sit here and ask us, and I know Mary, you can ask her anything you want. She's going to tell you it's not a big deal. She's not going to tell you that she's not to go buy her book, but I'm telling you, y'all should get out there and read it and check it out, because you're going to understand it better. That's like Preston didn't read. I did like four interviews with him, hadn't read his book yet. That was a shame, but... He said, man, you got to read it, because, you know, in a two-hour conversation, it's just not enough time to get all that material out. And I finally sat out and read it, and then next time I talked to him on the radio, he was like, oh, you're going to crucify me, aren't you? He's a nice guy, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. There's several archives of Preston on our service. But you know, it's one of those things that we have to deal with as ufologists. Now, I have to say, I think you Aussies got it easier than us Americans do, as far as they seem to be more open-minded in Australia than they do in the United States about this topic matter. Half of Paranormal Radio Network's audience is Australian, Mary. Half of our audience. And that's a big audience. And well, maybe not half, but real close to half. 40% are Australians or New Zealanders. But still, it amazes me. And like the UK, that's another big group of listeners. By the way, how y'all doing over there in the UK and in Europe? We have another huge group. But you would think, since we're a United States-based radio network, that we would have a larger tier in our own country, and we don't. And it's a shame. It's a shame. It really is. And Americans are just slow to change. I don't know why they are. They're just hard at it. I guess they don't want to interrupt their lives to think that we might be being visited, or someone could actually be being drugged through a wall and taken into a spaceship and experiments done to them. Because regardless if the person considers it a good or a bad experience, they still took you against your will. And for most on the planet, that's a bad thing. So, I don't know. It's going to be hard, and it's going to keep us our hands full for, I'm sure, a decade or two more. But I do really think, with efforts like yourself and some of the others working in the field, that eventually enough people on this planet will become educated to the fact that this is a real phenomenon. It's not going away. As best we can tell, it's been here for at least 6,000 years, and it doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon. Learn to deal with it. And I think eventually, because we're nonstop pushing on it, I think, you know, it's going to do it. See, in Australia, you've probably changed half of Australia by yourself, girl. No, I'm sorry.
Well, you know, famous or infamous, I think I'm probably more infamous than famous.
Well, infamous works. You know, eventually infamous will turn into famous.
You see, I think I get away with it in the sense, you know, I'm a middle-aged lady, and for a lot of people, they can just say it's my hormones.
Well, I guess, but... of course, they can't say that if they listen to you speak more than 5 minutes. Now, if you were a dummy and you couldn't speak correctly and, you know, you were making up some stuff and you couldn't remember at halftime, well, yeah, they might get away with it, but that's not what they're getting when they're talking to you. I would love to actually see you lecture somewhere, because I imagine you put on one hell of a lecture. And
well, actually, what I'll do, Joe, is I'll send you a presentation I did at Murdoch University about 18 months ago, so you'll actually hear one full presentation. I'll post that out to you.
Excellent, because I'll sit down and listen to it as soon as I get out. I love stuff like that. I really do. And it's easier for me, I'm going to tell y'all, it's easier for me with audio than it is for reading a book. I actually tell a lot of my different guests that come on the program, I said, man, is this thing on an audio book? They're like, well, no. I'm like, well, put it on. And I will do stuff like take the book, download it to my computer, and put it on what's it called, the naturally speaking text aloud.
Yeah.
And let it read to me, because usually I'm doing 50 things, so trying to sit and read is really hard for me, because it takes up too much of my free time, I got to be honest about it. But if I can plug it into my computer, put a headset on, and go back to doing what I'm doing, I'm going to absorb all of it. And it's just, you know, different strokes for different folks, I guess. But it works better for me that way, so I absorb knowledge better that way for some reason.
I think you need the visual to really help,
and that's why
I ended up putting my presentation onto DVD, and I will continue to do that, because like yourself, there's a lot of people really busy, and it takes a lot of effort to pick up a book and read through it. So to actually give them easy access to information via DVD is a really good way to go, and that's why I've been putting DVDs together for that very reason, so that people can, if they've got kids or... you know, they've only got a limited amount of time. They get a certain hit of information every time they need it without having to worry about making extra time to read.
Yeah. Well, it's a shame we don't live in the same country, because together we could probably write a book that would change the abduction in 13 years. And I'm really thinking too, Mary, and in the future, a lot of people will look back at yourself and say, you know what, she was on the right track, she was doing the right work. She took the natural progression, you know, from where abductions were 10 or 20 years ago, let's be honest, this was a dark age subject then. There was some knowledge on it from, you know, Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs and, of course, John Mack. And, you know, people tell me all the time about David Jacobs and Bruce McAfee and him, but to me, John Mack was the one that gave us credibility.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
He was doing hardcore, solid research on this. Matter of fact, ladies and gentlemen, I had seen a YouTube video the other day of one of John Mack's contactees. She's, I believe she's from London. Sure. If anybody knows what I'm talking about or knows who this lady is, please get in touch with me. I'd like to know who she is because I'd like to contact her. Actually, for a couple of reasons, but I'm not going to get in on over the radio. But if y'all know, if you've seen the video, I know it's on YouTube right now. If you see it, let me know if you know who she is because there's no name on the video. It just talks about, she talks about her abduction and being researched by John Mack, or the intro was by John Mack. So if y'all know who this is, just, you know, drop me an email, icar@cox.net, real easy, guys, easy to find. Because she's just something about it. I was listening to her talk about her experience, Mary, and she's definitely, you know, no doubt a contacted. But she fits into a particular group that I've been looking at lately, and I'd like to get in touch with her about it. Because to me, this, I couldn't see doing any other line of research. This, to me, is the most fascinating thing. It's kind of scary, I'm not going to lie. Do you ever feel like that this could be dangerous to you? I mean, because I know a lot of ufologists tell me, oh, I'm scared, my life's going to get killed or something. No.
Well, you know, I thought about that. And, I mean, let's face it, you know, I could very easily be taken out. You know, I'm just a normal, everyday kind of a person. I don't put any particular security with what I do. But, you know, there comes a point where you have to live your truth. And if it means that I, you know, can't do that, I'd rather not be here anyway.
Yeah.
So the bottom line for me is, you know, there's two ways of living, isn't there? There's a living to existing, you know, where you just, you're existing, or you're actually living. And for me, the only way I can live is to live this truth and follow my journey. If I don't do that, I might as well just give up and play bowls, you know. But I'd probably get out of sheer boredom.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, that's sort of my choice, you know. I've actually said, you know, in a joking manner, you know, that once I get bored, you can take me off the planet. Well, I'm not bored at the moment, so that's cool. But I can't live within a fear-based, you know, we live in a world that is constantly frightening us about life. It's frightening us about terrorism, about our food, about illness. I won't buy into it, and I won't be part of a mindset that limits me, because otherwise I might as well not be here. You know, I don't want to exist if I can't be all I can be and to live my truth. So if they take me out for it, well, they're welcome to, because I'll be here anyway if I'm going to have to be limited. And that's how I feel. I'm not saying that makes me brave, courageous, or anything else. It's just that it's the lifeblood of who I am, that I need to explore my world and speak my truth. I don't think I'm a danger to society in the sense of those undercover people that want to limit us or to shut us down. It's not like I'm exposing anyone. It's not like I'm targeting anyone. All I'm doing is providing a support for people that haven't got anywhere else to go. And I can't see that that's a danger, even to those that want to keep this hidden, other than the fact that the danger is that enough people becoming empowered may actually change society from that reason. But that would probably take more than just one person. Or you and me to combine, Joe.
Well, you know, I used to think that, but I have noticed. And it will take more than one person, but you know what? I don't think it's going to take more than about a dozen, maybe a half dozen, because if it's the right people and they're getting the right message out and they've got the right group of people. See, because, you know, for us, it's base work. I don't know when this disclosure is going to happen. So I consider what me and you are doing, you and I are doing, is base work. We're laying the foundation so that the researchers come and can say, okay, well, these guys really did their homework. They really understand the abduction scenario. They even have some ideas of what they're doing here, why they're doing here, and how a lot of these procedures happen. So they can take that. It'll be a lot easier, you know, if there's 10 of us now, 10 years from now, there'll be 100 of us. And they'll already have the basis of all of our work, plus what they've added on to it. It'll be easier for them to get it out. So in one respect, we will change it. It's just, might not happen in our lifetime, but we will change it. Just like John Mack set the research and the foundation for you and I, you know, which allows me, you and I, to do what we're doing today. In turn, we're doing the same thing, unless, excuse me, the 2012 thing is right, and then it doesn't matter, then at least we'll know the truth.
Mm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's wonderful that there's enough people like yourself that are actually prepared to put the information out. I think that's the most vital part of what is being done at the moment, is if you can get it out to help people understand what's going on for them. And the media is the best way to do this. There's no doubt about that. And what I've done deliberately is work with the media in every sphere that's come to me for, even if it's just for a short interview. They think they're coming to speak to me and interview me, but by the time I've done with them, they are more informed about this whole phenomena. And then when they interview me, from that, I get a far more credible information out there, and they be more respectful. So it's about educating the media. It's about getting them to understand the importance of this. And that's what you're doing, and I'm doing, and also helping the people out there by the millions that listen. All of them, you know, this helps them on their journey too. So it is like the pebble, and where it reaches, nobody knows.
Yeah, and that's true. And it's you know, for me, somebody asked me, do you have to do this? I'm like, well, no. I said, I don't know if I would say that I had to do it. I want to do it. I guess in one aspect, I guess they could say had, because it is a driving force in my life, but... I mean, you know, I don't think I'd have to do it. I could quit. I would be bored out of my mind if I did. And I don't. To me, I figure this is one of the most, if not the most important thing that's going to happen to man, at least in the top three. And I would like to at least be part of finding out, you know, why they haven't disclosed themselves yet, or what are they doing messing with our human? Why does this human have this kind of contact? Why does this one have this one? You know, what are these things like the blue plasma? What kind of instruments are being used? Just detail of it. And it's like the reptilians, you know, when we talk about the reptilians, a lot of the research points to they have genetic memory. And it seems, you know, we know that aliens abducted family lines, both the Greys, the reptilians, and the humans often abducted family lines. It was brought to my attention about a decade ago that a lot of these contactees that were being picked up by the reptilians actually were seen, like other families in their heads, other visions of other locations. It's almost like they were sharing the genetic memory of this reptilian species, which means somewhere along the line they probably shared some kind of common DNA, and that's why the reptilians were coming back and abducting in those groups. And it's kind of funny, I've had quite a few of these contactees that are working with the reptilians tell me, you know, I'll be sitting there, and all of a sudden I'll see like this huge library or this huge room, and there's a big glowing orb, and instead of you walk up and you put your hands on it, this what looks to be like a visual library opens up behind it. I guess it's some type of hologram, but a lot of them talk about this, and they're seeing this just like they were there. And apparently this isn't on our planet or anywhere around here. It's almost like it's a part of who and what they are, and it seems to be coming out more and more now. I'm not sure why, but it does. It's just one of those things, and when you're doing research that you run across it, you're kind of like, okay, well, this kind of changes stuff. There's suggest there's a relation, I mean a physical DNA sharing between these two and the reptilians, which is probably what's going on.
It's really interesting to say that. There's two things that come to mind when you mention that. I've had many people, including a little 14-year-old, where she was taken to a planet with two suns. She described the kinds of beings and how they actually was in a way of absorbing nutrients. She actually did 7 pages of information and drawings about this planet. It was all in one night. And other people have told me about visiting planets where they say they believe they originated from, and you know, with the two suns. And she described the fauna and flora, the little lizards that had different colors. She described the way they spoke. This is 7 pages of information from a 14-year-old. But what's interesting in that the Maori indigenous history is, I was speaking to a beautiful Maori lecturer when I was speaking in Rotorua, New Zealand, about a month ago, Tika Witi, and Tika Witi told me that their origins, they all know, were actually from the Pleiades, and they knew cosmology of the Pleiades as part of their heritage and indigenous understanding of their past. And I asked him about the tattooing that they do, the very beautiful tattooing sometimes they do on their sculptures, but also on their bodies. And he said it's because we come from a reptilian race and we have an extra gene. And he said, and that's what this is all about. We know where our origins are, and we know about the Pleiades way before there were any telescopes to say about the Pleiades or cosmology at all. So it's very much part of their history. And of course we get this with all the indigenous tribes. The Dogon tribe talk about the Nummo that came from the Sirius star system. And we get this, you know, the Wangina, Aborigine Wangina, that talks about the star beings that come down and gave them their laws, all very aware of their cosmology and what they believe to be, you know, connected to them and their origins, including the DNA. So that's really interesting when you have primitive peoples understanding the nature of DNA and what that actually means, the genetics, if you like. So, you know, that has been particularly fascinating for me, you know, going into the cosmology side of it and our connections to these different intelligences, because I've looked at, you know, the anomalies within our DNA, and believe it or not, in about half an hour, I'm actually having a consult with a geneticist over here who we're going to try and look at ways to understand maybe there may be something we can explore in the genetic side that will give us more information regarding our links to these different extraterrestrial intelligences, because the bottom line is there's no doubt that we are a hybrid race.
Yeah,
I've got absolutely no doubts about that at all. And it's a matter now of saying, okay, so how can we actually get some real understanding of that in terms of what is the evidence? And certainly if we've got these 223 genomes that are not in any other species on the planet. And it was interesting that I spoke to a gentleman that worked with Dr. Crick, the DNA molecule, who lives in Adelaide now, that said there is no other species on this planet that has those genomes, and they didn't come up the invertebrate phase of our evolution. So their sideways insertion cannot be explained, and two-thirds the difference between us and the chimpanzees, and all to do with higher psychological functioning. I mean, what more do you want?
Oh, I agree. We were talking about this a couple of weeks ago on the show, and the thing about it is that I tell people all the time, if you go back and you read your ancient history, just take your time, really study the Sumerians, really study the Egyptians, read about the Dogon, read about the Aborigines, read about the Aztecs, the Incas, the Mayans. You will understand that they knew this planet was being visited. They had a very good concept and understanding of what was going on. And according to their writings, we have at least two types of alien in us. I guess it would be the humans and the reptilians. There's rumors about the gray, but there seems to be more evidence as it points to the... In the Egyptian culture, the grays are everywhere. There are actually pictures of them on temples.
Yeah.
And I think on 11 different temples. The Sumerians talk about the humans and the reptilians in great detail. Now, granted, some of this might be exaggerated, some of it might be stories, but I would imagine there's some truth in here. And because of religion and a few other power problems on our planet, this is not something they want to be made readily available. But what is there now? Meredith, three possibilities for man is creationism, evolution or seeding of the planet, or some kind of interference with a race that was here. But that's really it. I would like to go for the creationism thing because it makes me feel better, but I really don't think that's what happened in this case. And as far as evolution, most of the evidence today points that we may have evolved in some form here, but the race that's actually here today has some type of forced evolution, some kind of intervening. Almost all the DNA studies done in the last 10 years in the United States suggest that this race was manipulated with. They compare us to Dolly the sheep. We had so many flaws and so many inconsistencies in our DNA. They compared us to Dolly the sheep. And they don't think that's forced evolution. They think that something physically forced the change of our DNA. So, I mean, even the evidence now is starting to mount and become, you know, piling up, suggesting, well, wait, guys, there's something else was going on in this planet, and apparently we're ignorant to it. But you see, the DNA evidence is going to help me and you. In the long run, it's going to help us out, because it's getting to the point now where the scientists are having to say, okay, wait, something's not right here. Normal evolution is not going to apply to mankind, and we need to figure out why. And they can go from there. But for me, that's another thing, Mary, while we're on this. I think that is part of the problem, because here you have these scientists talking about this, but it doesn't seem to be getting into mainstream, and this is big news. I notice even the big news media don't hardly pick this up. It's kind of like ufology, where they don't want to touch it. This is another one of those things they seem to just be leaving alone. And when you have, you know, prominent Harvard professors coming out and saying, okay, look, guys, the DNA is not, you know, matching to regular evolution on the planet of other species, like, you know, other species evolved. There's something wrong with our DNA. It doesn't function like the rest of the DNA. There seems to be other anomalies in it, suggesting that there was some type of interference or some type of, they like to use the word forced evolution, but it doesn't seem like a naturally occurring evolution from this planet. So I don't know, people. I'm telling y'all, go out there and do your homework, because there's a lot more evidence. Not only is this planet being visited, but we may at least share some ancestry with at least one race, if not two races of aliens. But you've read a lot of ancient, like the Bible, you know, with the story of Adam and, I mean, yeah, with Adam and Eve and the serpent and the apple of knowledge. I mean, and you find that story in all the ancient cultures, you know, where the reptilian came in and somehow another messed and changed things. The Sumerians talk about it too, so. But now, how do we perceive the reptilians in Nari? Are they good or bad?
It's a really interesting one, because a lot of people come to me and they don't know what to make of them. They don't know if they're good or bad, and which are the good ones and which are the not so good ones. Interestingly, I've had people have both kinds of experiences with the reptilians, some where it's been absolutely terrifying, and others where they've known nothing but love from these beings. And one of them particularly I always remember was Barbara Lamb, who's a very good researcher. She's also a cop circle researcher as well as a therapist that's worked in this field for 20 to 30 years now. And she told me that one day she went into a lounge room and there was this tall reptilian being standing there. But all she felt from this being was total love, and she was embraced by the being before it disappeared. Now, that was her experience of the reptilian being. I've had others that have had positive experiences. I've had others that have had terrifying. All I can say to people is, you honor your own experience. Whatever you're feeling from that being is your experience of that being. But I think we're inclined, but we've got to be careful we don't judge them by looks.
Yep.
Because, you know, when you start judging a book by its cover, the trouble is, you know, maybe a beautiful-looking kind of spirit, for example, that may not actually be beautiful. You know, I think we've got to go more on the feelings that we get rather than necessarily what it looks like. Because, you know, you can get some beautiful people that don't maybe look beautiful, but are the beautiful souls. So I think we have to take it that one step more and trust our own inner wisdom or resonance or whatever you call it, or our intuitive side that is giving us the information, rather than, you know, rely on what other people tell us about these things.
You know, it was funny because I was talking with a lady a couple weeks ago. She's a reptilian contactee. Actually, she's a reptilian abductee, I should say, not a contactee. There's a distinction there. And she was telling me about this horrific experience. And I said, well, when you seen the reptilian standing in your hallway, what were you thinking? And she was thinking, well, this big, ugly, scary, and I can't even use the rest of the language she used. And I said, and then you're wondering why you had a bad contact.
Yes.
I said, you forget that telepathic is reading everything in your head.
Yeah.
You were probably quite insulting and probably, you know, quite a big pain in the butt. And, you know, they're kind of, the reptilians are kind of emotional like humans are. They respond. You know, they're not like the Greys. The Greys, it's not that the Greys don't have emotions. They just seem to have a better control over them. Reptilians seem to be much more emotional. And when you aggravate them, they tend to aggravate you back. And I said, you know, that's probably part of what was going on. It's not all of them. I'm sure some of the procedures were kind of rough. And, you know, first time you start remembering a lot of this stuff, it's not, you know, a pleasant memory. But, you know, I tell people, you know, think about the entire overall experience. Don't just focus on the negative parts of the experience, because most contactees I find have both. They have a positive experience. Some of the procedures and some of the, you know, experiments they do are kind of rough. And, but a lot of the other stuff is, you know, like the teachers or learning or downloads or a lot of the other stuff that goes on board the ship, dealing with the children and stuff. These aren't really bad contacts. So, you know, I tell them, I said, don't just focus on the bad contact. Look at the whole picture. You know, they have a job to do, and yes, sometimes you're not going to like what they're doing, but is that the overall picture or is that just a small part of the picture? You know, that's the thing. Is your experience on all your contacts, are they all bad? Are they all good? Or is it 90% good, 90% bad? And I'm starting to find out that more and more contactees would say 20, 25, maybe 30% bad, 70% good. You know, there are some bad aspects of the contacts, and there are some things that they consider to be scary or harmful or frightening, but overall, they don't feel that way. And you know what else I find funny? Is when I ask about 95% of them, I said, if I could stop your contact, do you want it to stop? 95% tell me no. Is that true for y'all? Or?
Absolutely. It's often when they understand more about it. I always remember Tracy saying to me she was fearful of her experiences only when she seemed to be the only one having them. She didn't know what was going on or why. But she said to me, there's always been an equal exchange. I helped them achieve their genetic goals, and in return my healing and psychic ability plus my understanding of life on Earth, was enhanced. She said they protect me when I ask them to. Basically, at the start, I misunderstood the Greys. But she said the knowing part of me initially made a decision to assist them, and the understanding of this can be overshadowed by the fear. So she said, you know, basically, a lot of my clients, when I ask them, on a deep level, if they feel they've consented on any way, many of them actually say yes, but it may not, and I don't know how this is going to challenge some of the people that listen to this program, but a lot of them believe it was a pre-birth agreement, that they, for some reason, agreed to cooperate because of the gains they made in terms of their awareness. It sort of acted as a catalyst for waking up to a greater reality, and through it, they, you know, a lot of them feel like this is part of the big plan, the evolutionary plan of humanity. So they feel very passionate about being part of it and wouldn't change it, as you say, for anything.
And that's the thing, and they wouldn't. And, you know, it's a good point that you brought up. Sorry about that. My brain just went dead. The little timer thing popped up in front of me. Sorry about that. That's letting me know we got a few minutes. But it's a good point, and I don't know what's going on out there right now with some of the way people want to always view stuff negative. I'm not talking about contact yet, I'm talking about the world, and it kind of rubs off on everything else. But when you do come to understand that, like Mary was saying, you do come to accept it, and most people don't want it. And with the pre-birth agreement, or I don't know what it is, but almost every contactee I talk to, I'm not going to say everyone, but almost every contactee I talk to says they agreed to this. Now, since we know these abductions start happening pre-birth, it's hard to understand how someone could agree with this. Now, it could simply be that their great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather or grandmother agreed to this, and it's a genetic memory, and they remember it, but almost all contactees feel like they agreed to what's going on here, agreed to these contacts. And I find it a strange thing that it's an overall theme across contactees, whether they're reptilians, humans, or Greys contacting. It's a very interesting thing, but I mean, I don't think it's anything we can prove, Mary, but overall, I got to say the overall majority of contactees feel like that. And
I mean, we've got to get away from, at the moment, expecting to prove everything, because there's still a lot we can't prove about our world and reality at the moment as well. There are a lot of non-physical things we can't prove. We can't prove that love exists, for example. You can't give it a color and you can't give it a shape or form, but we all know it exists. And I think with some of these, it's more about what people resonate to or feel within their own awareness or knowing or resonate to, or that gut feeling or whatever it is. And we can't dismiss that just because we can't, you know, put a form to it or make it solid or scientifically quantify it at this moment in time, because there's so much science can't explain just yet. One day we might be able to.
Yeah, and I agree. Well, I know we're getting close on time here. One more time, tell them where the sites are, so that they can find you on the website, email, where are you going to be soon? When are you coming
back? Well, I'm actually coming over
to
the U.S. Next year, and I'll be speaking in Montreal in July at the Institute of Integral Human Sciences. I might be also speaking at James Gilliland's conference, you know, at his ranch in Washington City as well as in the U.K. in September, October. I'm speaking at the Probe Conference, the Cornwall one, and also the Irish conference. So I'll be doing a little bit of overseas work as well as work here. I'm doing Adelaide in a month's time. So I get out and about, which is good, and it's wonderful meeting everyone. But my website is www.acern.com.au. That's acern.com.au. But if you Google Mary Rodwell, you'll find my site anyway.
Yeah, she's easily searchable, guys. She really is. Click point, boom, you're there, over with, you found her. You know, Mary, you're always great. I always love having you on anyway. And if you get in the States anytime, let me know. I'm coming to see you wherever you are. Just tell me when you're here, and I'm coming to see you.
All right, Jess.
She's going to think she got a stalker, y'all. I'm not going to stay. But no, really, because I'd love to just sit down and have a face-to-face with you without, you know, 300,000 to 400,000 people listening to it. Because there's a lot of information I'd like to talk to you about, but some of it's good for the air, some of it, maybe we shouldn't talk about on the air. They might take it, but I want to tell you, thanks for being on. You're always a fantastic guest. You always do a great job. I find you to be one of the more informed people in ufology, especially in alien abduction research. You know, it's not many people. Anybody who knows me knows I don't really endorse many people, and I don't really push many of my fellow ufologists, because in general, I don't really think they're getting to the heart of the matter. But in your case, Mary, you know, I think you're doing a fantastic job. I really do. And I want you to keep up the work. And like I said, anytime you're in the States, let me know. And what we were talking about is, but you know what, I'll talk to you about that in a second. Any parting words before we get out of here?
Just thank you so much, Joe, for your openness and for your wonderful questions. And what a delight it's been to speak on your show. And a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll be back in a couple minutes because we're going to do a wrap-up. And stay tuned.
You're listening to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Light up your night with the Kevin. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Welcome to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo.
Good evening, one, and welcome back to UFO Undercover. Like Natasha said, I am your host, Joe Montaldo. Mary Rodwell was a very interesting guest this evening. We got something special in store for y'all coming up in the near future. She's going to bring on a contact in New Zealand, and her and myself are going to interview this lady over the radio. She's going to be in Australia, she'll be in New Zealand, and I'll be in New Orleans. And we'll be doing a live abduction interview over the radio. So I don't know when we're going to do it. It'll be probably in about 3 or 4 months. But as soon as I know what the date is, I will have it posted up. Now I have Patrice Sheridan on the line with us, which is iCar's Northeast Regional Director. Patrice, how you doing, dude?
Oh, just fine, Joe. What a wonderful program.
All right, thank you very much. I was having fun. Mary, like I said, Mary's an easy interview. Very knowledgeable, very quick to answer the questions because she knows her stuff. Now, what you have for us tonight?
Okay, very quickly. The Intruders Foundation met in New York City this past Saturday, November 3rd. Wonderful presentation by author researcher Bud Hopkins. Investigative journalist Leslie Keene had two major announcements. The first development, of course, was the landmark case settlement won by Leslie Keene and the Coalition for Freedom of Information, for which Leslie Keene serves as investigative journalist, regarding the landmark case settlement with NASA's agreement to research file archives for information on the 1965 Kecksburg, Pennsylvania incident. Details of this historic settlement can be found at www.freedomofinfo.org. That is the Coalition for Freedom of Information website. Now, jumping to the second major announcement, and I really believe this event will be of historic significance, Leslie Keene's announcement, rather, pertained to an event that's going to be occurring this next Monday. Fife Symington, the former governor of Arizona, will moderate on Monday, November 12th, a press conference at the National Press Club, which, per the CFI News Advisory, will present a panel composed of former military, government, and aviation officials from 7 nations, United States, England, France, Belgium, Chile, Iran, and Peru. This news is also found at the www.freedomofinfo.org website. Now, the press release notes that these distinguished speakers will invite the government of the United States, quote, to join in an international dialogue and reopen its investigation, quote, in cooperation with other governments currently dealing with this unusual and controversial phenomenon, end quote. The group of panelists represents the highest echelon of expertise in these subject matters. I know our audience, the ICAR members, will recall such incidents as the Rendlesham Forest, Bentwaters, Woodbridge events, the Belgian UFO wave, and the major Tehran-Iran sighting event from a few decades back. And there will be members on that panel with information on those events. Now, reading a list of these panel members for this Monday, November 12th, event at 11 a.m. at the National Ballroom, Fife Symington, moderator, Rodrigo Bravo, captain and pilot for the Aviation Army of Chile, Jennifer Wilfred de Brewer, former Deputy Chief of Staff, Belgian Air Force, John Callahan, Chief of Accidents and Investigations for the FAA, Dr. Anthony Choi, founder of the Peruvian Air Force, Jean-Claude Dubuc, Captain Air France, Charles I. Halt, former Director, Inspections Directorate, Rendlesham, General Parviz Jafari, Iranian Air Force, and if I remember correctly, this general was the pilot who was involved in that Tehran sighting, per the reports on Saturday, if I remember that correctly. Now, Trig Johnston, Northwest Airlines Captain, Jim Peniston, Rendlesham, Dr. Claude Poher, Centre National d'Etudes Spatiales, the French Space Agency, founder of the French JAPAN, Nick Pope, Ministry of Defense, Dr. Jean-Claude, Ministry of Defense of the United Kingdom, Dr. Jean-Claude Reeves, Centre National de la Recherche Scientifique, France, and Commandant Oscar Santa Maria of the Peruvian Air Force. Again, it's going to be Monday, November 12th, 11 a.m. at the National Press Club Ballroom. Now, the event is opened to credentialed media and congressional staff only. Two contacts, James Fox and Leslie Keene, and those individuals are noted on their press advisory.
Yeah, well, I got a call in to Linda Keene today, ladies and gentlemen. As a matter of fact, I'm hoping I'll hear something back from this evening or first thing in the morning. If not, I'll be calling her again. But hopefully, ladies and gentlemen, Patrice will be down in D.C. Monday, so keep your fingers crossed on that. If not, as soon as I know, I will post it so that everyone is aware. You know, so keep your fingers crossed on that too, Patrice. I don't think it's going to be a problem, but, you know, like I said, I haven't got a phone call back, so we'll find out.
Probably a very busy lady at this point with such an important event.
Oh, well, yeah, and it was kind of late in the evening, too, when I called, because I got in kind of late this evening. So, when I, matter of fact, I kind of walked in the door this evening, made four or five phone calls, and then got on the radio. That gives y'all an idea of kind of how the day went.
Very busy person, indeed.
Now, what do you think? I mean, you think what do you think is going to happen here Monday? I mean, it sounds like a very interesting cast of characters. I've heard some pretty prominent names in there. I hear some fairly specialized people in there. What do you think? Is it going to be just an overall? I mean, are they making a statement first off? Are they going to be like the Disclosure Project where they come out and make a statement? Or are they just open this up general questioning by the press?
Well, it sounds to me as though there will be a quite an extensive press question and answer segment to it, but they really are inviting the United States government to reopen the investigation on UFOs and to join in participation with other countries to review this really and study this very important subject. And I know from some French ufologists that this event will be major. Jean de Bourdais was kind enough to have this particular news advisory translated right away for some of the French lists. I noted up that I know that it's posted right now at the Republique Ufologique. Well, they're very excited with those three major French figures who are going to be speaking on Monday.
Yep. Oh, and before we get sidetracked here, UFO Global Focus next Sunday, right?
No, that's going to be the 18th.
Oh, the 18th. All right. Sorry, guys. Sunday after next. I apologize.
And I'm preparing my little summary of the Intruders Foundation, which was an excellent presentation. And I'll be translating that, but it takes me a little while to translate. I have to check my accent.
But you're going to be fine. I don't think it's going to be a problem. I wish I could come up to this one in D.C. I'll just be getting my brain back together from Jim Daryl Simmons by Sunday. So I'm keeping y'all's fingers crossed because I'd really like to have Patrice X, and I already know she's going to ask the hard questions anyway. And
yes, that Jim Spock Daryl Simmons event sounds wonderful in Houston this weekend.
Oh, you're off to...
I'm in Vegas.
Yeah,
I'm
in Vegas. That's right. That's right.
Absolutely.
Let's see, guys. And then, wait, we got somebody else in somewhere attending something in Ireland.
Isn't that our wonderful Southwest Regional Director and our National Director attending the Whitley Strieber event there in Arizona?
I don't know. Maybe so. I have to check. I know we got a lot going on, guys. We're covering a lot of areas. There's a lot of events being covered by our car. We kind of keep our hands in everything. It's just, you know, part of what we do. But still, I'm looking forward to your show because this should be interesting because I know you're going to take a different approach to this. So I'm looking forward to seeing how all this is going to play out, guys. Yes, we're adding another UFO show to the network. We could use about three more, to be honest with you. But there's a lot of ground to cover here, and we don't all work in the same areas, and we're not all looking at the same answers. It's one of the novel things about being a member of the ICAR. You are allowed to seek your own answers, and you know there's other people seeking other answers, so it's kind of like a big data pool. Originally, you could have said it was a big data pool for close friends. Now it's just a big data pool. You know, we're just all collecting information. Now, who's keynote? Who's going to be keynoting Monday? I forgot. I know I heard you say it, but then it just went right out of my head.
Oh, well, the keynote speaker at the banquet at Vegas is going to be Danny Sheehan, but now at the Monday, November 12th press conference, it will be moderated by Fife Symington, former Arizona governor.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was looking for. For some reason, it just went right out of my brain. Well, so we got an Arizona governor down there talking about UFOs. That's in itself, guys.
And we also have that FAA representative, and I think he's going to be speaking about that major Alaskan sighting. I'm trying to think of the name of it. It was major. I believe that was one that Dr. Bruce McAbee studied.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one, too. Now, of course, you said that. Now the name's going to go right out of my head.
Me, too.
That's going to bug me until I remember it now. There was something else I wanted to ask you. My brain is just mush today. Vegas, just the weekend, right? It's just Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right?
Yes.
Party Friday night. Somebody else is, I think Cynthia is going to be there. I think she told me she's going to be there as well, doing a little video footage.
Oh, excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, in case you don't know what I'm talking about, that's Cynthia Seagull. She's out of Seattle, Washington. Check her out.
Dolan will be speaking.
Yeah, and Oh, yeah, Karen will be speaking. So Karen and Rich will be speaking. That's right. I forgot about that.
Yes, Richard Dolan, too. It's going to be so exciting.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, Richard Dolan, who occasionally hosts on the Paranormal Radio Network, he hosts his wife's show every once in a while. Matter of fact, he did just pass Sunday. He will be speaking there, and so will his wife, Karen Dolan. Who's Karen? I forgot. Karen told me what she's speaking, but I forgot.
I believe the connection there with the ET subject in children's media.
Oh, yeah, that is what it is. That's right. I forgot all of it. That one, I'm kind of looking forward to that. I'm going to have to get her to send me a copy of that presentation. And, Mary Rodwell, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, is sending me an up-to-date CD that I can play with y'all in the room. It should be very interesting. It's a video CD, so we'll download it into the video archive in the Paranormal Radio room. Y'all can come check it out. The audio part, we'll play live over the Paranormal Radio Network, but if anybody who wants to actually see the video part, you'll have to come to the Paranormal Radio room to see that. What else, Teresa? Anything else before we get out of here?
Wonderful discussion, wonderful program. I learned so very much this evening.
How come I feel like we're forgetting somebody here? Look, guys, if we're forgetting you, I'm sorry. I know there's something else. I know there's something else I want to talk to Teresa about. Maybe it's something business related.
Well, you know what? My summary is going to have some great details on Bud Hopkins' presentations.
Mm.
Wonderful, great details. He has outstanding research, similar to ICAR, very objective, maintaining of client confidentiality, great detail. And again, a neutral focus.
That's a good thing, because I haven't seen I haven't seen anything new from Bud in a while, so I'll be looking forward to it. I don't know why I haven't seen anything new. Maybe I just haven't done enough research, but let's see, Bud, something else I wanted to ask. I don't know. I guess I'm going brain dead, guys. The brain has just gone away somewhere and is floating around in space. But Patrice, I want to thank you for coming on. Guys, be sure to tune into a show November 18th. It's going to be good, I'm telling y'all. Tune in. If you don't, I'm going to send it to your house until it'll whoop your butt.
Thank you, Joe.
I'm sorry, guys. I'm insane tonight. It's UFO Global Focus. It starts on November 18th. Be sure to come check it out. 2 to 4 Central Time, right?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, 2 to 4 Central Time, November 18th, Global Focus. Come check it out. First guest.
Mary Rodwell.
Oh, Mary Rodwell. Oh, gosh, you got to come check that out. See, I'll be putting my hand up in the audience. You see, I'll be getting in trouble. Anyway, Teresa, I'm going to tell you thank you. We're going to get out of here. Next week, ladies and gentlemen, Kathleen Wilson will be on the show. I butchered her name. Sorry about that. Katarina Wilson will be on the show. And we'll be discussing alien abduction again, so please stay tuned. Thank you.